In an ordinary Sydney suburb, a family lives unnoticed.
You came across so innocent.
Father and son keep mostly to themselves.
We didn't go beyond the friendly nod or hello.
But behind closed doors...
Something's gone wrong. Big time.
If you don't make phone calls, nobody can tap you.
A new three-part series investigates how the road to Bondi began long before the first shots rang out. The Road to Bondi. Search Background Briefing wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So I was visiting Kath and Jim, Chantel's parents, in Wodonga, and they have so many photos and videos of Chantel, and I came across this photo.
I'm in Denmark, in Western Australia, not Europe, sadly. Our public broadcaster budget doesn't extend to Europe. It's a coastal town about 3 hours from Nanup, another of these small southwest towns, much like the one I live in.
So there's this photo, which I don't know if you recognise.
Oh, my yes, that's my son and me.
The picture we're looking at is the same one I found in Kath McDougall's box of old photos, with Tracy written on the back, in Chantel's tight, curling handwriting.
That must have been at the Earl of Spencer.
Tracy tells me the photos of Leela's second birthday.
Oh, my God, she was just a little force. I always remember Chantel going, just gentle, gentle, Leela. She just gets so excited trying to contain herself. She'd just almost have to go like frozen and stiff.
Leela's got a round face with big eyes, short blonde hair with a fringe under a party hat. Tracy says while Chantel and Leela danced, Simon looked right at home, having beers and eating pub food.
A bit of a beer connoisseur, or a bit of a contrast from a person who he thinks channeling and only in the spirit realm.
You were kind of the only photo of any of Chantel's friends that they had.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they had really any other people come and, you know, because now in hindsight they're obviously were living fairly, you know, secluded-y.
It was a bit of a random stab in the dark, but I had a hunch that it'd be worth trying to get hold of Tracy. I was right. Her full name is Tracy Page. She's still living in Denmark, where Chantel, Leela, Simon and Tony all moved in 2003, about 4.5 hours south from the Floriat House in Perth. I'm Dominique Bayens, and this is episode 4 of Expanse, the Nanup 4, A Question of Belief. Tracy's long white grey hair, flowing pants and turquoise green top tell me she's a certified Denmark hippie.
I've probably always been a fairly free thinker. Denmark's just the whole package, really, for slightly alternative living and different type of education. Well, you can be yourself is really what it's about. It's being more true to yourself.
When Tracy and Chantel first met in 2003, among the floating pastel-coloured fabric and natural wooden toys of a Steiner playgroup, they identified kindred spirits in each other. They both had daughters the same age and a similar worldview.
We both felt safe with each other and I guess we had similar outlooks. She was probably a good 10 years younger than me, but it didn't seem like that.
And just like Tracy, this older than her years gentle mum was
discerning of who we were around, the energy and, you know, I don't want to say protective, but definitely discerning of our environments for the children.
What do you mean by that?
Just more quiet, people who are more grounded and, you know, aware of themselves.
As Tracy tells me about her friendship with Chantel, I start to hear things that I've heard before from other people.
So I remember her saying, Simon said it's okay for you to come to our place. And I was going, oh, okay.
This feels almost word for word like what homeschool mum Diane told me. Simon let them come to Busselton for homeschool group. And there's also the same explanations for Simon's behaviour.
It was like he's up a lot at night because he's on the internet and he has a group of people that he talks to.
Chantel said he was a creative writer, channeling spiritual insight, which also accounted for the odd hours he kept.
And she was more just his supportive person and the homemaker, and he was all into what he was doing. I didn't really have any judgment over it. It was sort of like, you know, younger women, we do, and, you know, and we fall in love and we have children.
Tracy's obviously pretty open-minded, a you-do-you philosophy. And what she heard about Simon didn't sound that strange to her. She moved in circles where the idea of people channeling spiritual insights was normal, had worked for clairvoyants and healers herself. I get the impression that what stood out to Tracy was actually how not New Agey Simon was.
Just sort of a bit, I don't want to say slothy, but I just remember this sort of this stance of sort of, you know, slothy is just a word that comes to mind. Not bubbly or anything like me and Chantel.
Tracy had met Chantel and Leela less than a year ago, but Leela and Tracy's daughter, Sarah, both vivacious toddlers, became besties.
So they were lovely little friends. They also loved dancing and like doing kind of, you know, little shows, dressing up and then singing and dancing.
There's this really sweet echo of Chantel here. The shows she'd put on with her sister Colleen. The dreams of a life on stage. When I first spoke to Tracy on the phone, I asked about whether she ever saw anything that troubled her in Simon and Chantel's dynamic, whether Chantel seemed under his control. And at first she'd said no. Chantel was way too grounded and capable for that. But as we kept talking, I felt like she started questioning her memories. She realised how much younger Chantel was, which she hadn't clocked at the time. And that maybe she had been more vulnerable than Tracy had realised. In 2003, Tracy was walking down the main street when she saw Chantel at a cafe with a dark-haired young man and stopped to join them. Chantel introduces him. It's Tony Popovich.
I remember thinking he's more in Chantel's age group.
Tracy knows Chantel's partner is Simon Cadwill, but she never thought there was much of a romantic spark between them. So seeing Chantel with the younger man, it sparks her curiosity.
I thought that would make more sense if maybe they had a thing going on.
This is pretty unlikely. Tony was gay.
I realise in hindsight he was much more of a follower of Simon, but I didn't, you know, didn't click then.
Tracy joins the two for coffee, and as they're chatting, she gets to know this new bloke. Tony seems like a capable, hands-on kind of guy. But Tracy notices there's something kind of lost about him.
I wouldn't say nervous person, but not completely self-assured type of person.
And then the conversation turns. Tracy's pretty sure it was Tony who brought it up.
A bit of a, I mean, I don't want to say Armageddon-y kind of thing, but I guess there was that slant in the conversation.
Armageddon, as in doomsday.
I don't know how engaged I would have got into it. I probably would have been, you know, it's quite an interesting topic to surmise where the world's going.
Tracy got the impression that Tony really believed there was a doomsday coming, and that Tony, Chantel and Simon all kind of didn't want to be part of society.
I always thought that was their grand plan, to go to South America. If the world's too crazy, that's a great place to go to kind of be away from it.
Tracy didn't have much to do with Tony after that day, but she's still been able to tell me more about Tony than I've managed to get from pretty well everyone else I've spoken to. So few people have any recollection of him. And those that do, it seems hazy. People describe him as gentle, polite, quiet, a hard worker, but nothing that seems to get to who he was as a person. I know some basic facts about his life. In 1996, Tony was living in Perth. He was in a relationship and had a well-paying job for a supermarket chain. He had a company car, a house, and according to his family, was living a very normal life. But then he attended a spiritual seminar called Turning Point. From what I've learnt, he came away from that seminar a different person. He believed that he was a higher power, with spirituality surrounding him. He became uncommunicative and his relationship broke down. He sold all his possessions and began a nomadic life, never staying in one place for too long, going long stretches without contacting his family. It was in this new world of spirituality and higher powers that he crossed paths with Simon Cadwell and moved into the tent in the Floriat House. When the other women left, it seems like Simon, Chantel and Tony became a trio. Tony would sometimes leave and move somewhere else for a while, but he would always find his way back to Simon and Chantel. All of this feels like a familiar pattern. All these people, Tony, Chantel, even Chantel's old flame from her Auntie Pauline's, Simon Cookerman, they were all living, for want of a better word, normal lives. Then they come across Simon and his teachings, and there's this really sudden shift. They quit their jobs, bust important relationships, move away from family and friends, keep parts of themselves hidden away. It's eerily similar. Simon, Chantel and Tony had barely been living in Denmark a year when Tracy got an unexpected request from Chantel. She wanted to know if she could put Tracy down as a rental reference. They were leaving town and they'd found a place they liked the look of in Nanup, 3 hours away. A little blue farmhouse. They had to leave, Chantel had said, because...
The way it was presented, like, you know, yeah, we've been seeing spirits in our place. It's getting too noisy here.
And when you say that it was getting too noisy here, do you mean that in the sense of, like, traffic? How do you mean noisy?
I mean by electric interference, Wi-Fi, phones, that kind of thing.
Here's the EMF again that we've heard about before. But this is the first time I've heard about visions. But Tracy says Simon was seeing spirits in the backyard.
He felt a bit intruded.
While this might seem odd, Tracy's matter of fact and grounded in her descriptions of the spiritual world. It's a reminder that while the world of journalism deals in hard fact, there are lots of different ways of seeing things. Tracy agreed to be a reference for Chantel's application to rent the blue farmhouse. Simon, Chantel, Tony and Leela packed up their house and left town quickly, without fanfare.
We've probably had a phone call. See ya, and we'll stay in touch.
The four rolled from the crystal blue ocean inland into green hills and the towering forests of Nanup in late 2003, a place where their alternative ideas and lifestyle wouldn't draw attention, where they could lose themselves in the isolation. Leela was now a toddler, and it had been a year since Chantel's parents had seen either of them in person. They hadn't visited in Denmark, instead bringing Chantel and Leela home to Wodonga in Victoria for a visit. Jim still hadn't met Simon Cadwell. So in 2004, he and Kath headed across the country to the Blue House. You'd think after years of waiting to meet the in-laws, Simon would have been rolling out the red carpet for Jim and Kath's arrival. But that was not the case.
Simon was in bed, didn't get out of bed, and I said to Shanta, said, oh, he sleeps all day, he'll come out at dinner time or tea time.
Jim would have to wait until dinner for Simon to finally emerge from his bedroom in a pair of track pants and a jumper.
He didn't look like super dressed, or he didn't dress up and look get done up for us, that's for sure.
Jim could look past Simon's lack of effort in the fashion department. It was the conversation that followed that really took him aback.
First thing he basically said to me is, oh, I don't want you to talk to Leela because, you know, you talk rough and you're corrupter, you know. I'd never had a conversation with him. I got me back up a little bit already with him, you know.
Things between Jim and Simon only got more awkward as the evening went on, and Jim pulled out his camera to snap some family photos.
He said, no, you won't take me a picture, it'll take me soul away. He wouldn't let me take a picture of the kids, like Chantal and him and the kids together.
Any hopes of bonding quickly faded.
I was already feeling a bit on edge anyway about the first meeting with him. It didn't get much better anyway after that.
Jim noticed Chantal seemed pretty uncomfortable too.
A little bit on edge, I'd say, if I was going to rock the boat sort of thing.
Which Jim admits with a cheeky grin, he did do a bit over their stay.
I started working around the house for Chantal, fixing things around the farmhouse and making as much noise so he'd wake up. Hope he got cranky and he'd talk to me.
I can't help but feel disappointed for Jim and Kath here. It feels like every step of the way they're still hopeful that maybe things aren't as bad as they seem, and at some point Chantal will get the regular suburban family life they want for her. But as far as first time meeting the in-laws, things couldn't have gone worse. It didn't get any better. On a rare dinner out, Jim and Kath saw an entirely different Simon, introducing himself to people, chatting.
He'd go and sit with young people and he'd be chatting to them, but he wouldn't take two words to us, but he'd be chatting to them flat out. You know, you could see like he was working the room. It was like a car salesman was trying to sell you a bomb.
I wouldn't do it yet, Leela. We'll wait.
When they visited next time, a year later, they knew Chantal was working and carrying the domestic load, so Kath's keen to help. Well, try at least.
Chantal had to go off to work and she said, oh, you can bath Leela and get her ready for bed and put her to bed. He sort of jumped in after Chantal went, grabbed Leela, ran the bath. Dude, he didn't want me to have anything to do with her.
And where's your pyjamas?
It was just to keep me away.
Is that the book you want to read tonight?
Yes.
Okay, let's go in your bedroom then.
I can tell this is a painful moment that has stayed with Kath. Not being allowed to carry out the everyday grandmotherly role of giving Leela a bath. Leela, who she barely got to see as it was. They grabbed any opportunity they could to bond with Leela, managing to sneak a night where Leela could have a sleepover in the caravan.
Simon was saying, oh, she won't stay out there, she won't stay out there. She stayed all night, she had a lovely time.
He got really cranky because she stayed with us the night, you know.
The next morning, it was time for Jim and Kath to head back home to Wodonga. So they packed down the caravan and hooked it onto the back of their four-wheel drive. Simon, Chantal and Leela were there. But Simon wasn't having a fond farewell.
He wouldn't let Kath give her a kiss goodbye. He stood in front of the four-wheel drive holding the baby and wouldn't let her say goodbye to her. And she's screaming because she wants to kiss Kath goodbye and he wouldn't let her. He was just really holding onto her like, you know, terrible, you know. And that was their last memory that day.
That must have felt awful, not being able to say goodbye to your little grandchild.
It was horrible, yeah. And driving away and she's crying her eyes out, yeah.
Jim and Kath had to tear themselves away from their screaming granddaughter, always with that threat that if they said anything, they'd be cut off and never get to see her or Chantal again. They could only afford to make the trek over to Nanup every now and then. It was a long way to nowhere. But Chantal would call home every week, ask Kath what she should make for dinner sometimes. Then in July 2004, Kath answered a call from Chantal and she sounded worried. Simon Cookerman, Chantal's ex, the guy who she'd met Simon Cadwell through, had turned up in Nanup.
Leela was only little, a toddler, and every time she went into town, he would try and get her attention and come up to her.
Chantal told her mum she felt uncomfortable. She was advised to take out a restraining order. The landlord of the Blue House has a confrontation with Cookerman and tells him to get off the property. Finally, the police are called. The local copper, Sergeant Jeff Taylor, picked Cookerman up and he was moved on.
And then later on we found out that he shouldn't have been. It was the wrong Simon, really. It turns out he wasn't trying to hurt them.
He was actually trying to warn them.
As Sergeant Taylor was transferring him out of the area, Cookerman was insisting that Chantel wasn't safe, that Simon Cadwell was running a cult, that he wasn't who he said he was. But Cookerman was sent on his way all the same.
It sort of settled down a bit after that.
But that wouldn't last. It sounds like Cookerman wasn't the only one making his way to Nanup because of Simon Cadwell. As I've been gathering information about his life, I've found out that Simon Cadwell would get these visitors from time to time, sometimes from across the world, come all the way to Nanup to see him. When they'd visit the house, Chantel would take Leela to the park, where they'd wait until the visitor had left before heading home. Chantel was also working really hard to support the family. Over time, working at the fish and chip shop, the pub, helping a woman with disabilities, she had chickens and would sell the eggs in town. And when Chantel would work at the pub, Simon would wait outside sometimes while she did her shift, and her colleagues noticed Chantel would seem nervous. When I meet Jim and Kath, they shared a bunch of home videos Chantel had sent them. It's strange watching them.
Don't push him over, Mum.
It all seems far more regular family life than I was expecting.
Hi, great-nan.
Hi.
Happy 80th birthday.
There's one where they're all playing a game. Leela clearly delighted that they get to pull ugly faces at one another.
Me.
Leela.
Okay, you go first.
There's a birthday party in Nanup.
Happy birthday, dear Leela.
But then there are these occasional moments that jump out of nowhere, that feel off.
I think they play those instruments in heaven.
Chantel and Simon are watching Leela open her presents.
Which one would you like to open first? Presents? Purple or blue?
Mummy's drunk again. Any excuse. Especially on daughter's birthdays.
I don't know if it's what happened after these videos were recorded that's colouring my impression, but the way Simon says this to the camera, to some unknown watcher at a later date, without Chantel even knowing what he's saying, it gives me the creeps. Since moving to Nanup, Chantel and her Denmark friend Tracy would keep in touch every now and then. About a year after the four had moved into the little blue house on the isolated outskirts of Nanup, Chantel's back in Denmark, soaking in the evening with her friend Tracy.
When women get together and start chatting, you know, half the day's gone by.
Chantel had called a few days earlier and asked if she and Leela could come and stay. They'd picked up where they'd left off. Sarah and Leela playing dress-ups and dancing around the house, Tracy and Chantel cooking and catching up on lost time. But once the girls were in bed, Tracy thinks they were sitting out on her back porch when Chantel says,
I've been to Bunbury because I had an abortion there.
Since I began looking into Chantel's story, I've been trying to find out as much about her as I can. And I actually found out about this pregnancy a while ago, long before I met Tracy. But until now, I didn't think it was relevant. But what Tracy tells me next makes me realise this is important.
She didn't really want to. She wasn't that happy about it. It was definitely because Simon wanted her to, because he didn't feel that there should be any more children brought into the world.
Right, so you got the impression she would have preferred to have the baby.
Absolutely. I guess she was just, yeah, she was just trying to accept it. It was still fairly matter of fact, but there was, you know, there was an essence of sadness there.
This is the first time I'm hearing this part of the story. Lots of people have indicated that Simon could be controlling. But hearing that he was the one who decided Chantelle should end her pregnancy is difficult to take in. It also feels significant. After a couple of days, Chantelle and Leela said goodbye and jumped on the bus back to Nanup, the little blue house, and Simon. In the years leading up to this, as the four had been moving to ever more isolated areas to try and escape the EMF or spirits or psychic noise, cracks were starting to show in Simon's online world too. In 1999, around the time Simon was getting back to Australia from the UK, a follower called Jean sent out an email and published it on the web for anyone to see. He says Simon Cadwell had reached out to him online, and at first he believed in his teachings, even undertaking the Truth Fellowship correspondence course. But after meeting Simon in person, he found him to be cunning and deceitful. He said Simon had manipulated younger women into giving him money. Then the replies started coming back. Jean published those online too. People said they'd also found Simon to be dodgy, that he was, quote, cold-hearted, egotistic, phony, robotic, imitation of a man. There was one email from a woman named Kim who wrote that Simon asked her to marry him. They'd never even met. By 2007, Simon's behaviour in real life was erratic. You remember the great silver EMF ball hunt? And his online behaviour was getting pretty troubling too. He was chatting with someone from his online group who suggested he go to Brazil, but he rejected that idea, consumed by what's been called a spiritual hopelessness. In another email, he said the household had a plan for a family suicide. They'd all wander off into the forest. He, Chantelle and Leela would take a fast-acting drug, and Tony would bury them before taking it himself. He said he didn't think Chantelle would do it because she kept delaying. People he communicated with said that his energy seemed a bit withdrawn. He told someone else he was depressed and taking antipsychotics. Looking back from where I stand, all this looks like a snowball gathering speed, hurtling downhill until no one would be able to stop it. It was around June 2007 when people in town started talking. They were noticing things. The people in the blue house seemed to be giving away their possessions. Chantelle's pet Dachshunds had had puppies and she advertised them for sale. Tony Popich sold a car. Simon gave away an apparently hallucinogenic plant, each of them giving away things that had been important to them. One day, Tony turned up at Jody McDonald's, the electrical apprentice and next-door neighbour with a taste for bronze horse statues. He was giving away Chantelle's chickens.
In the country, it's unusual to give away your chickens unless there's a reason behind it. Either you're getting new ones, they're too old to lay, or they're like poor layers.
These chickens were young and still on the lay. Jody called her other neighbour to find out more.
I had said to her, you know, she's just offered me all her chickens.
This story feels so typical of country town living. Not asking too many questions, but immediately getting on the phone for a bit of neighbourly gossip. I can so relate. Unlike Jody, her neighbour wasn't afraid of having a sticky beak.
So that's when she rang her and asked her, was she leaving? And so that's when she said no, that they couldn't afford to leave and they put a lot of money into doing renovations.
And then, on June 24, on the other side of the country, in the McDougall family kitchen, the phone rings. There's a lot going on, a house full of people left over from a family birthday. Chantelle's sister, Colleen, picks up the phone. She says a few words, then hands it over to Kath.
She just rang up and asked me all about the party first and everything, and I told her how it went really well, and she sort of said, oh, I've got to tell you, we're going to move to Brazil. I just couldn't believe it. I didn't know what to say.
Chantel ever expressed an interest in moving to Brazil before that phone call?
No, she never ever expressed any interest to move there.
Kath passed the phone over to Jim.
I didn't ask a lot of questions then, but I just said to her, we want to communicate, we want to know where you're going.
It's clear listening that Jim and Kath felt totally swept away by events. Things happening they had no control over, just doing what they could to try and make the best of it. Jim got the internet put on so they would be able to email. Kath put together one of her care parcels.
I'd sent Leela a little backpack with, I think it was Leela and Stitch on it, and a little photo album, and I put all the family's photographs in there, and on the back of our photo I put our name and address and a telephone number and that for her.
Why did you, I guess, go to that effort of putting all the photos together with all your details on it?
So Leela wouldn't forget us. She'd always remember us. Because I knew we couldn't afford to go over there if they were staying over there. And she had the contact details if she got older and she wanted to contact us.
When I started looking into the disappearance, I spoke to a lot of Nanup locals who knew Chantel. A lot of them didn't want to talk. But I did hear about their experiences with Tony, Simon, Chantel and Leela. In the lead up to the disappearance, Tony turned down a good offer of work.
It just raises more questions.
Chantel suddenly resigned from a job without giving a reason.
She didn't line the dots up at the time, but how could you?
A week before they disappeared, she gave away some of Leela's clothes and toys.
And Chantel said, yes, Leela's not going to need them anymore.
I heard that in the weeks before they vanished, she'd lost a lot of weight.
Chantel told her that she was doing a cleanse.
She told someone else that she was trying to get to a higher plane of existence.
Overheard him saying they're not on the same plane as us.
It all feels pretty bleak.
And that was the last time she ever saw her.
Hearing these stories and about the chickens and everything else Tony and Chantel were selling or giving away, not to mention the reason behind Chantel's abortion, that it was Simon's call because he didn't think any more people should be brought into this world. It leaves me with a deep sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach. It tells me that whether Chantel was planning to leave for Brazil or wander into the bush with Simon and Tony to take their own lives, she was aware that they were going somewhere, possibly for good. But what about Leela, that little force of a girl who didn't get a say in any of it? It's a really difficult question to reckon with. And there was something coming that would reveal the extent of Simon's deception and manipulation and leave everyone questioning what they thought they knew about the man living with Chantel in the blue house. I'm Dominique Bayens, host of Expanse, the Nanup 4. Please subscribe so you get every episode as they drop and leave a review wherever you're listening. It really helps others find us. If you can add to this story or have information you think might be important, please get in touch. This season of Expanse was developed in collaboration with ABC's regional WA team on Wudandi and Bibbulmun country. Sound design is by Grant Walter, who is also a producer, along with Megan Woods, with additional production and research by Jessica Hinchliff, Kate Stevens and Louise Mylan. Our supervising producer is Pia Wursu. Executive producer is Blythe Moore.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.